Something big is cooking during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill. We're talking almost 2 feet across big. That's 13 burgers at once big. Right now, get the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill for just $99.98 at the Home Depot and bring that classic charcoal experience to your cookout. Buy it online and pick it up in-store to get to grilling sooner. Go big during Spring Black Friday with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill, now just $99.98 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Significant Others. I'm Liza Powell O'Brien. And in yesterday's episode, we learned about Jane Chaney Spock, who helped her husband, Dr. Benjamin Spock, craft his landmark childcare book, but whose life was essentially undone by its success. To talk more about the influence of media and medical experts on American culture, I'm thrilled to welcome best-selling author and host of the delightful podcast Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm, thank you so much for joining us. The reason I thought to reach out to you about this episode is because I heard an episode of your podcast, Revisionist History, that talked about Will and Grace, the TV show, and how subversively influential it was.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone should take a listen to that episode because it's really great. But to summarize, Will and Grace was not what we might think of as serious media because it was just a network sitcom. Mm-hmm. But it had a profound and measurable effect on politics in our country. You give a statistic that public support of gay marriage more than doubled from the beginning of the show's run until the end.
Yeah.
In a similar way, Dr. Spock introduced Freudian developmental concepts to much of the world under the cover sort of advice for new moms and over time for dads too. Mm-hmm. Are there other examples like this that come to mind for you in terms of a person who had a vast impact on the culture in a way that was kind of under the radar?
Well, it's funny, when I was reading the script you guys sent me about Dr. Spock, I thought of this guy, John Rock, who I actually did a podcast on John Rock, but also wrote about him for The New Yorker. He's the guy who did all the clinical work around the birth control pill. He's really the father of the birth control pill.
Wow.
And he was this Catholic doctor in Boston, who devoutly Catholic, who believed what he was doing in his work developing the pill was A, in keeping with his Catholic faith. But more than that, he felt that he was liberate. I mean, he understood the extent to which he was liberating women from the consequences of unwanted pregnancies. And he was thinking about, he would go into these tenements in Boston and see, you know, these women who were 30 years old and looked like they were 60 and had eight children, and they couldn't feed any of them.
Right.
And that's what he was thinking about. But what's interesting is that he's similar in many ways to Benjamin Spock, which is that he is, first of all, they're physically the same. They're both these tall, kind of rocks, not waspy, but, you know, he looked the part. And he had a kind of following in the exact same era. If you had asked Americans in the 60s to name the three doctors they knew, they would have said Jonas Salk, John Rock, and Benjamin Spock.
So akin to a Fauci type of a persona.
Yeah, a kind of. And these guys, the group is actually a little bit larger. There was another man named Ansel Keys, who was the other person I thought of. Again, same era, again, this kind of a celebrity doctor scientist. He was the person who brought the Mediterranean diet to America. And he wrote best-selling books and was on the cover of Time. And, you know, they're all in this kind of mid-century era where a group of these sort of charismatic men of science are taking science to the public in a way that it had never been taken to the public before.
Is that an American phenomenon, the celebrity doctor, or is it a modern phenomenon? Is it something that see anywhere else at any other time?
Well, so Ansel Keys, who's at the University of Minnesota, after the war, but just before and after the war, he's often referred to as the first celebrity doctor. Now, I don't know. I haven't kind of investigated whether this is true, but it does seem like, you know, there is a kind of the rise of middlebrow media culture, Time magazine, Life magazine, these ideas, this notion of, you know, these thoughtful, reasonably sophisticated media publications that were designed for the first generation in history. This was the most high, the first kind of highly educated, reasonably sophisticated mass generation in history. That's what Time and Life were all about, right? Mm-hmm. They were reaching that person who was the first person in their family to have a college degree. And all of these people, you know, Spock is talking about, he's taking Freudian ideas and repackaging them for the general public. Like, I'm not even sure you could do that today. Sort of nuts.
I don't think so either. No. And he was smart enough never to name Freud because people were so terrified of Freud for some good reasons.
But it's my point is it's sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And Ansel Keys is doing, is bringing very sophisticated modern ideas about nutrition. He's saying the American diet doesn't work and getting people to reflect on what they eat for the first time. And John Rock is saying you can actually alter your own personal physiology and fundamentally change your role as a woman. These are all like, it's all happening exactly the same period. And it's kind of dramatic.
Right. It also, the biographer that Meyer, that who wrote the book that I used for most of this research for this episode, makes the point that this idea that, you know, after winning the war and beating the Nazis, Americans sort of are like, we can fix things. We can make the world better. We can do it one baby at a time, or we can do it one, you know, woman at a time if you're sort of, you know, taking charge of your reproduction. And that seems to fit too, and right alongside the, you know, the what you're talking about in terms of the general populace being either having a higher education level and also maybe aspiring to that. It feels like there was an aspiration toward intellectualism or some version of that that, especially right now, sort of feels to be falling out of favor in large sectors of our population.
Yeah, you're right. In all of these three cases, this is a generation that's anxious to put some distance between their own practices and the practices of their parents.
Right.
Right. It's this sort of explicit rejection of the traditions that you inherited.
Right.
And this idea that you can remake your world.
And that's really stuck with us, I think. You know, I feel that that's actually one of the things that's getting maybe hammered out of place for a lot of people right now is this sense of eternal progression, right? That every generation is going to be better than the one that came before it. And my generation, I'm Generation X. And so we were the first ones when we were in our 20s to start hearing those rumbles of, you know, you might be the first generation not to succeed beyond what your parents have. And we didn't like that. So we said, oh, we don't think so. We don't think that's true. And of course, it has turned out to be, sadly, the beginning of a different trend. But it does feel like such a resonant American message that, you know, we can all go make it better. And one of the other things you mentioned, and now this is a follow-up to your podcast episode, but is that TV was such a moderating medium. And I'm wondering now, with the fracturing of media in general, are there still moderating media that are largely consumed? Or do you think that's something that's kind of shifting out of the center of our culture?
There certainly isn't a kind of pool of shared cultural experiences.
Right.
That's gone. I was thinking, this is actually very relevant to these people we're talking about, Spock. The thing about Spock is that makes him so powerful is that it wasn't that one family down the block were followers of Spock and no one else were. They were this lonely outpost of child-rearing innovation. It's that you did it because everybody was, like, it was a set of ideas that spread far and wide. Every mother in your group would be reading Spock and following Spock. That's why it was so possible for people to make this transformation in the way they thought about child rearing, because they felt comfortable being part of this, a group. And that's a very kind of alien notion from us today, that you would make a change in your life and everyone would be making the same change simultaneously. Now we're so used to the idea that everything is fractured and it's one little group over here that believes this and another group over there that believes that. There just wasn't the same kind of expectation of division.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
So I don't know if you do this, but I catch myself all the time sort of endlessly scrolling through cooking accounts on social media thinking, oh, I could make that. I could make that. That looks delicious and easy. I could totally make that. And then I don't. I just never seem to take that next step and go make those things and eat them. So now I have a new favorite thing to do, which is to scroll through the Factor website. Because they have all these photos of this gorgeous, healthy, fresh food that I always want to eat. And then instead of going to the store and shopping for ingredients and prepping and cooking, all I have to do is wait for it to show up at my house. That's how easy it is. The folks at Factor were kind enough to send us some to try, and I'm so glad they did because it really is terrific. Head to factormeals.com/significant50 and use code significant50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code significant50 at factormeals.com/significant50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Start clean with Clorox. Because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Were you a Spock baby?
I guess I was. So I was born in 63.
Mm-hmm.
And almost certainly my mother read. In fact, I remember my mother talking about Dr. Spock. So I guess I am. I mean, she was not as, I think she benefited greatly from that kind of everything's going to be okay kind of.
Sure.
Think that you would know far more about this than me, but I suspect that the popular understanding of Spock and what Spock said, there's a gap between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it filters down to people, you know, to moms sort of in the field, I think a lot of it is just like, stop worrying so much. That's how Spock was explained to me as a child. He was the guy who said you didn't have to worry that much.
Right. In terms of, you know, Dr. Spock wasn't quite a Jekyll and Hyde. You know, he wasn't mm-hmm. that extremely different in private, but he was markedly different. He was, you know, not the kindly, just trust yourself and don't overthink it kind of message giver. He was very uptight. He was very awkward with his children. He was a particularly brutal match for his wife in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the sort of context of the mid-century, and that has so many ramifications. But in terms of the way that a man, I guess, would tend to be a husband to his wife, who was very supportive of his work, how typical does their story seem to you, and how much does it seem as if maybe there was, you know, something a little bit more punitive almost going on with this particular couple? I know that's sort of a lot of speculation and kind of a hard question to answer, but
yeah. Well, everything, you know, I knew very little of this story until I read your episode. I mean, it's unusual in the sense that obviously she has her own share of demons that she's...
Correct.
But that idea, like, a lot of this is just about the frustration of the, not just a mid-century woman, but you know, you have several generations in a row of women who are educated or at least exposed to the wider world, but have no ability to make good on that. You know,
that's right.
My mother is a member of that generation, but she gets the chance in her 50s. She goes back to school and gets a MSW and then has a career, like a sort of second career. But you had that generation, you know, she didn't get to start her career at 22. She started it at 52.
Right.
That's the, and her own mother, who knows what her own mother would have been capable of doing. She was a school teacher, but never got a chance to do, you know, to kind of flex her muscles in the wider world.
Mm.
So there's, I don't know whether you can't, I mean, I feel sorry for them both in a sense that it would be very difficult for Benjamin Spock to kind of solve the larger puzzle that society had created for his marriage, which was there's no kind of model for giving his wife her proper due. Although, having said that, I suddenly remembered, do you remember your, I suspect, much younger than me.
Really not that much.
There was a historian, a couple called Will and Ariel Durant, who wrote in the 50s and 60s, these enormously popular histories. And they wrote them as a couple.
Mm.
But it was always sort of a striking thing about them. They were like Doris Kearns Goodwin on steroids, basically. They sold kajillions of books in this era. And what was striking about them is that they were a husband and wife team.
Mm-hmm.
And no one presumed that the husband was the dominant party and the wife was they were a team.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning of a kind of, there were just the beginnings of this notion that you could have a model in popular culture for a woman and a man as being, or a husband and a wife as being equal partners in some kind of creative endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't quite happen fast enough for Mrs. Spock, right? She's just a kind of behind the wave.
Yeah. Also, I do feel that he, you know, I always have that question of how much of greatness requires putting up with some unpleasantness, you know, that he had this sort of outsized ability to be generous and caring to his patients and to mothers in general. And, you know, is it possible that he also could have been that even-handed and thoughtful in his own personal life? You know, that like, it's not necessarily going to be balanced because it takes an enormous amount of energy to do both of those things. And they feel almost as much like an unfortunate accidental match as anything, because I think if she hadn't been as afflicted as she was by her addiction illness and her mental health issues, that she might have been able to advocate for herself a little bit better. But, you know, I find my mother is an MSW also. She, I think, would have preferred to be a doctor, and that was where she was held up. So she was a little bit further ahead of your grandmother, certainly, and maybe a half step ahead of your mother in terms of she got her MSW degree while she had little kids.
Mm-hmm.
But given her druthers, she probably would have been, you know, a psychiatrist from the get-go. And it is really tricky. It is really tricky to, you know, it's not anyone's fault. It's just really tricky to figure out how to have a big career and have children. And some people figure it out and other people struggle with it, but having the option is everything. And, you know, still working on that often. I have one more question for you, which you do not have to answer, but some people enjoy it, which is, in terms of your life's work, is there a person who you would call a significant other in terms of opening a particular door for you or setting a particular fire that, you know, led you to where you are now?
Oh, you mean using that in that term in the way that you seem to be using it, which is anyone who's plays a quiet role in the...
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be quiet, but just someone, if not for them, things would be different, which could be said about a lot of people. But if there's one who looms large.
Yeah. I mean, there's many answers to that. But one in particular was my editor at The New Yorker, where I spent 10 years, was a man named Henry Finder, who is little known, but was enormously influential in developing the careers of, I mean, an entire generation of New Yorker writers. He's still at The New Yorker, and was unusual as an editor in that he didn't, at least with me, he never changed anything. So he wouldn't touch your, he would read what you did, but he wouldn't touch anything. He would just tell you, often not in a terribly direct way, what he thought you needed to do. So it was the first time I'd ever encountered an editing which had as its explicit purpose the development of my skill, as opposed to the editor superimposing his insights on top of mine. Here was someone whose only interest was in teaching me how to do a better job the next time. And I used to always refer to what I called my internal Finder, which was, the internal Finder was after, you know, 5 years of being edited by Henry, you knew what he was going to say before he said it. And that was the point of his, he'd gotten inside your head and was permanently improving things without having to say anything at all. Like, so that was like kind of genius. And I feel like he was the person who took me from, I mean, my development as a writer was immeasurably aided by this. He's incredibly quiet, shy, brilliant guy who would just murmur a few, you know, here's a few, I thought of this, or I didn't know, something around here doesn't work, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that turns out to be the greatest, for the first year, you're baffled, and then by year three, you're like, oh, okay, that's genius.
Right? When it sticks with you forever, that's a sure sign.
Yeah.
I am so appreciative of this. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope I get to see you again soon.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell, for joining us, and be sure to listen to Revisionist History wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it for this season of Significant Others. These stories have been a joy to tell. I sure learned a lot, and I hope you have too. Thanks to everyone who sent in episode suggestions. Please keep them coming by emailing significantpod@gmail.com. And from me and everyone at Team Coco, thanks so much for listening.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.